get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Hi, and welcome to the near post. I am Nick, and you are listening to 2XX FM or whatever online format you happen to be on. So with me this week, I've got Clive and Gerald, the usual suspects. How are you today, guys?
Great.
G'day. How are you, Nick?
Oh, pretty good. Decent win for the Mariners on the Friday night. So I have been buzzing all week, I have to
oh,
say.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay.
You're a sad case, Nick. Yeah.
Well, it's really, basically, most football fans are like this. If my team wins, I'm happy. If my team loses, I'm not happy. That's really what it comes down to at the moment.
Welcome to sport.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, before we start, Nick, I mind just having an apology to Wayne, a Mariners supporter out there, for a little slip of the tongue last week in referring to Sydney FC as Sydney City. Apologies, and we'll make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's nice to know that someone's listening, even if they do only come out of the woodwork to correct us. So we're just going to kick off this week with some little bit of news. Starting off today, actually, something that came out just a couple hours ago. Mille Jedinak, one of my personal favourites from the Mariners, is possibly going to be joining Stoke City. Tony Pulis's mighty Stoke City. This transfer window, possibly. $2.5 million is the supposed sum.
$2.5 million?
Yeah, for Mille Jedinak. Because he signed a long-term contract when he joined Palace, just a year and a half ago, I think it was. He's been doing pretty well. Started basically all their games this season in the Championship, but I'm not really sure it's the time to move for him. If he's playing well at Palace, might be playing Premier League next season as it goes.
Palace doing well at the moment.
I'm not sure why you'd want to jump into a Stoke City lineup where you might not even get a game. Or
they might not even be there.
Not even join a Stoke City. Oh, Stoke's pretty well entrenched in the Premier League now, I think.
Still nearly half a season to go.
They don't play particularly brilliant football, however, which is my main sticking point with them. But look, I think he's better to stay off at Palace. Palace has got pretty good reputation for being a decent footballing side. And, if you're playing well and you're playing regularly in the Championship, I don't really see that much difference.
Well, I understand well Palace is playing is actually moving to Manchester United.
Yeah.
So see whether or not they play well.
He can move in the summer when Zaha goes as well. Mm. That's probably the best option there, I think. But further on, actually, just a bit of a bad piece of news today, actually. Vinny Grella has renounced his retirement from professional football effective immediately. He made his long-awaited return from injury against Western Sydney last weekend and unfortunately then tore his calf muscle. So he's decided to retire from football because he's facing another 3 or 4 months out, I think, with that calf muscle. He would be facing at least some sort of injury spell, and he's decided to cut it short because, it's not really worth it if he's going to keep getting injured.
Perhaps Hart's loss might indeed be somebody else's gain. I'm not sure whether or not Vince is the sort of lad will hang around and still contribute to the Australian game. I mean, he's got a wealth of knowledge there. It's a fabulous playing career. You don't know whether or not you're going to lose that to the game. I think he still has stuff he can provide for Australia.
All the past players have that sort of experience that you want to pass on to the younger players, but whether or not the FFA has actually done anything about that remains to be seen. Another Melbourne Heart piece of news today, Aziz Bage, left back for Melbourne Heart, has moved to Turkish side Bursaspor on a 3-year deal from memory, which is a bit disappointing. So they've lost both their fullbacks this transfer window. Moroni went to China, I believe, and then Bage has flown to Europe. So they're looking pretty thin at the back now. I don't actually know who they have in their squad to replace either Moroni or Bage.
Nick, what sort of fee was he going for?
Oh, I really, really don't know this one. Mm. I think it was around $1 million, but I'm not entirely sure. I may have to check that.
That's pretty good recompense, though.
Yes.
Mm. Well, it depends on whether it's over 1 year or 4 years or 5 years.
Or whether it's got a ton of clauses put in, he only gets this amount of money if he makes
so many appearances. Yeah.
Sort of thing. Look, it's probably a fairly good move for him. I think the Turkish League is a step up from with the A-League, but look, it's a pretty good quality of competition, fairly even throughout the whole thing. Whether or not he gets games, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but the point is, it's a step up if he gets the minutes there.
Yeah, because Bruce Gitte, when he didn't get the playing time he needed. Mille Adnak, when he did get the playing time, so, and you see the contrasting differences now. Bruschetta's back in the A-League, Jednak's playing for possible Premier League promotion. Look, best of luck to him, and hopefully Melbourne Heart's campaign isn't too far derailed by this one. Bigger story news this week, actually. John Cosmina has decided to walk away from his post at Adelaide United due to a lack of trust between him and the club's hierarchy, which has been interesting. Look, Cosmina's been... He's got some decent results for Adelaide, I must admit. But, look, I don't think he's too much of a loss. He's really just... he's an old-fashioned coach, I think, and he's not really the person required to take the club forward, in my opinion.
It's a perennial problem, though, with clubs, though, isn't it? I mean, you can be gone at a whim. And I mean, he's not one of those people who's going to be backward and coming forward. He's going to be telling the
Explain to me, has he walked away from a contract from Adelaide City, or has he walked away from a gentleman's agreement?
Sorry, Adelaide
United. Keep those cards and letters rolling in.
We'll be sprinkling in a few Sydney Uniteds later on. And
so has he walked away from a contract, or has he walked away from a gentleman's agreement?
I think he hasn't actually signed a contract past this season. It was a handshake agreement that he made with the club back in March, I think, or something to extend the contract, but he hadn't actually signed anything. So I don't think he's legally bound. Actually, he might be, because those sorts of things don't have to be in writing.
Well, Adelaide United, they've just finished a particular case in the courts.
But I think it was... he did speak to the club about it, and I think it was mutual consent from his termination.
Okay.
Bit of a bombshell, though.
Yes, I wasn't really expecting it to just... This
well, club. With Adelaide riding so high
at this point
at the
in the season
as well.
Yes. Michael Valkanis has stepped into the empty coach's position. Was he the assistant beforehand?
He was.
Yes.
Yeah, he sits on the bench next to him every week.
Mm. So what happened to Luciano Traini, who was his assistant during the ACL?
No idea. I've actually just been watching him sitting there on the bench during A-League games.
I think he's still attached to the club.
Yeah. Maybe he's a technical director or something.
Because I remember Cosmina wasn't actually accredited to officially coach a team during the ACL, so Traini had to sit on the touchline as the head coach, and Cosmina was like away doing his license so he could be properly accredited to take charge of the side.
Mm. My sense is that Adelaide's a really well-run club, and I think they'll get over this. And only the patches of time is going to find out.
I'm kind of worried about all these kind of machinations, but we'll leave it till later. Yeah. I'll have a bit of a gas bag about that.
Okay. So the big showpiece event of the weekend that just gone was the W League Grand Final. Now, unfortunately, it was Sydney FC who came away with a win, 3-1 to them. But what did you guys think of the game? Obviously, you would have seen it.
I keenly watched it on the weekend. I actually thought it was quite a good game. I just don't think that the victory had their usual sharp striking power. I thought they were... Larson was still very good in midfield, but I think Sydney FC certainly looked as though they were the goods, and it was kind of finished off by a penalty decision at the end, and that kind of made sure that victory weren't going to come back.
Was the crowd a crowd that enjoyed the final for what it was? Looking at the fact that there was actually more people there than there was at any other particular women's game, is that right?
Actually, no, not quite. It wasn't. It was just under the record.
Under the record, which was set in season one.
A couple of hundred, I think it was. Yep. And it's just over 4,000 people.
Mm. Okay.
So, you could say it's still a big win. It's just I'm always puzzled by looking at games where the footage and the vision comes from the side of the ground where it's looking to an empty stand. And I mean, we talked about this quite a bit while we're watching the game, the fact that it just looks like there's nobody there.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Question for you, Clive, just in regard to, I'm assuming you've watched a lot of the games in the W League this year. How do you think the ABC have handled it all?
Well, I'm particularly dark about the reduction of coverage in women's sport generally. I thought the way they had it originally was they had the full Capitals game on early in the afternoon, followed by the full match of the day, plus highlights, and it's kind of been trimmed back. I mean, they obviously don't want to spend a lot of money on it, but some of this comes from the fact that A-League clubs don't want anything to do with their female W League
counterparts
at all. So I'm not very happy about it. I would have liked to have seen the ABC do what they've done before, which is to back this kind of sport, women's sport in general. They back all the women's sport. And the fact that they spent a lot of this season showing the whole of the Champions League in hockey, you know, around
and,
the time.
And the fact that the shoot shield for rugby union managers is you get a full live game each weekend as
well. Yeah, well, it's the same. It's the same thing. It's the same problem. But I would have thought with no real... I mean, obviously the Champions hockey was a big deal, but I couldn't see why they couldn't keep the coverage at the, at the level it was at. It was a really good coverage, their previous coverage. This season it's been kind of a bit of a washout, and it's been put on just straight after it's been recorded, and it's been hastily trimmed, and you're really only seeing less, it'd be less than 45 minutes of highlights, which isn't really acceptable.
Let's see what sort of commitment they have next season then.
So it was a decent result for Sydney, obviously, but
I might just say the W League final was all live. I mean, that was I mean, what I don't know what it was live, but it was the full game that
closest
we actually
you
saw.
Could get to live, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I don't know whether, I thought they'd kicked off at 2, but it was shown at 3:30. But you know, but it's as close as possible, and it was a full game. Whereas the previous weeks, it's all been trimmed down.
Wasn't it just highlights of the one match of the week?
But, yeah, it was. It was highlights of one match, which meant that you didn't get that nice roundup at halftime. And I mean, that was always a big bonus.
It becomes a less polished product, and in that case, I think it's lesser for it.
I think the basketballers have been hard done by as well.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, we'll go to the A-League's matches this weekend. Kicking off Friday night, lovely win for my Central Coast Mariners on. Over the Adelaide United boys.
That's a nice smile, Nick.
Yep. Mitchell Duke actually scored, which was pretty nice. Double off the bench, so Graham Arnold must have been pretty happy with that one. Obviously, it was a pretty one-sided game, I have to say. We had most of the chances, most of the shots. Daniel Bowles somehow managed to score for Adelaide in the first half, but came back in the second to win it.
Sounds as though he's in disbelief.
It was a triumphant comeback. It was a victory to savour for many years.
Nick, I've got to ask you. Daniel McBreen,
Well,
why is he scoring so many goals?
I have no clue, to be quite honest. I wanted him gone at the end of last season. I was just like, nope, he's 33 now. He can barely run. He can't put a header on target to save his life, yada, yada, yada. And then he came in this season, and it was just like a new man. But I don't think he's actually that great a forward. He just seems to... he has a lot of luck going for him at the moment. Like he's not one of those clinical strikers that you can say that guy's going to score a goal because he is a good player. It's more like that guy will score a goal probably because he'll be standing at that really opportune moment to tap it in from this guy's shot or whatever. So like the other week when he scored a double against the Wanderers because basically the defender basically passed him the ball and he was able to go one on one with
the what you're saying, he's a goal poacher.
Yeah, he's a goal poacher. He has to wait for those opportunities to be made. Whereas good forwards make the opportunities.
The point is, he's on 14 goals and he's head of the goal scoring league at the moment.
Yeah. As long as he scores, I don't really mind, but there are games where he doesn't really have that much to offer the side, and that's where I get frustrated with him.
I think you're right that it was very one-sided. I don't think Adelaide looked like they were going to get back in at all, really. And that was quite surprising given that it wasn't exactly a dynamic Central Coast midfield, as we've seen in past months.
I don't know, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Perhaps they knew in the Adelaide squad what was just around the corner. I'll just throw that out there, guys.
It's a possibility. But look, a win is a win. I'm not really going to complain.
Well, yeah, a true supporter.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we'll head to the big blue from the men's big blue, shall we say, of the weekend. It was a Melbourne victory over Sydney FC. And look, it was another really solid game from both sides. Melbourne victory did get the win, obviously. But... so that puts them into second now, because obviously Adelaide's result over the weekend. Do you reckon these guys can have what it takes to catch the Mariners? Or
you're talking about the victory?
Yeah, the victory.
I think given the fact there's still, what are we talking now, 8 rounds?
Yeah, still another 8 or 9 rounds.
I think there's anything can happen, obviously, in that top 4 group. They've still opened up a bigger gap now between them and the teams below. I was very disappointed. You said it was a good game. I actually was disappointed with the fluency of Sydney. And they lost Emerton quite early in the game. And he was replaced by looked like a rookie. And they didn't. I think that not having the framework that they've built that good win on the previous week, it didn't look like them at all. It didn't look like the same team. And it was actually a lot more negative than that game. They weren't as open. They weren't looking to score as much. And it just became one of those arm wrestles. And of course, in those, the victory always going to, overtake the team that's trying to hold them off.
Let me come clean here a minute, Nick. When you ask the question about will they actually catch the Mariners, do you see the minor premiership or the winning of the grand final as the most important thing?
Look, I think minor premiership is important at the moment because you do have that ACL qualification from it. Obviously, I do understand that it's in the Australian sporting scene, the grand final is the thing. I'm probably about 50-50. I feel like you should be able to win the minor premiership, but you should be able to win the grand final in that same season. If you really need to prove yourself as the best team, you should be able to produce that winning performance when it's crunch time.
I suppose I make the point that when you're talking about the Mariners being caught by victory, really, when it comes down to the last games, which are really important, the top two teams will be playing one another to actually qualify for the final, on the grand final. So does it really matter whether or not it's actually going to be up the mid-north coast or down in Melbourne? Because those two sides will meet if they finish 1-2.
I'm a bit of a traditionalist on this, I've got to say. I really like the team that wins the 27 rounds to be crowned as the premiership side or the champion side. And I think that's much more important to me. I think the finals have often been a whim. You've seen some very one-sided scores in final games in the past. And often it's been a surprise as well who wins, whereas it's not necessarily on form. And I know Australians love a grand final, but for me it's really the team that finishes at the top.
In my opinion, I think the A-League finals at the moment are a good addition to the calendar because we don't have a cup competition. So when we get to the point of having an FFA Cup, I would like to see it supersede the finals. So you'd have the A-League season.
Do you think that's likely to happen, though?
No, I don't think it would, because that's just what the A-League want. And I think David Gallop will want that NRL Grand Final showpiece, because that's what they've got going with the NRL. It's really worked for them. They had the whole A-League showpiece. So he wants that same sort of equivalency.
We're looking at maximising crowds for the final 3 weeks of the season, and I think that's a very difficult thing to get away with. Although I do agree with you wholeheartedly, Clive. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's necessarily about being a traditionalist. I think if you want to find out what the best club is over a season, it has to be the side that is the most consistent and finishes top. There's no other way of being able to define it.
There's a little aside here. Actually, when the Mariners play on the field, their on-field jersey has two stars above their crest for their two league titles that they've won. Now, I don't know any other club in this country that actually does that, but I think it's a little bit, it's maybe arrogant, but it's just more the fact that they're glossing over the fact that they've lost three grand finals. I still think that
you said three circles as well.
Or at least like.
Well, you think it's a bit like a Spitfire with the stickers on the side. Is that what you mean?
It's just like I feel like if you're going to wear those stars, other clubs should be wearing them as well. But
I like the idea as well. And when I looked into it a couple of years ago, found out in the UK, or shall we say in the Premier League, that's not the case. You're entitled to wear stars, or you have an invitation to wear stars if you win the Champions League. You don't have a right to wear stars or any change to your emblem, as opposed to a logo, your emblem, unless you get it sanctified by the FA.
I know they do it a bit differently in Germany and Italy in particular. Yep. So you've got like a star for every 10 titles, I think is what
that's
they do.
That's right, yeah. Mm.
Because obviously their league's been going a lot longer. And then I think, it's like winning one championship gets you one star, and then I think winning 10 gets you the second star or something like that.
Yep.
So,
which I think you're saying is it's a culturally specific thing, so why not start something here?
But it's just like they didn't even tell anyone that they were doing it.
It just appeared because
someone posted the picture on Twitter in the first round. I was like, well, they didn't even make an announcement about it because I followed their Facebook page and their Twitter and stuff. So there was no news about it. They just kind of stuck them on there, and they're not even on the replica jerseys.
Don't mention on the website.
No. Just to ask you about the finals series. What do you think of the fact that there's 60% of teams playing the finals?
I think that's a bit of a farce because I feel like probably top four should do it, but if obviously when they came up with that top six format, the idea was going to be there was 12 teams and then six finals places, which is what they have in the AFL and the NRL. They've got the top half makes it through, but I think over 50% of the teams making the finals is ridiculous.
It kind of devalues that winning of the grand final because it might be the team that finished sixth.
Certainly does.
They say it's because there won't be any interest in the league if the bottom half has nothing to play for the final few rounds. But the NRL and the AFL don't really have this problem because you've still got teams who are rooted in the bottom of the ladder and they still get decent crowds. So I don't really see the need to have that extra allocation of sides just, you know, ramp up some interest when in reality the grand final win is really going to come from the top three teams. That's basically what's happened since the start of the A-League.
Plus there's still six teams in line to make a fifth or sixth spot.
Yeah.
It's still extremely close.
I think it devalues the finals because you can say this team has only won like less than half their games, but somehow they're deemed worthy enough to have a chance to win the trophy, which is deemed the most important in the competition.
So maybe it'll be more justified when they have a bigger league.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're not going to expand it then to eight finals.
I agree with you. I think as the A-League matures, and maturation is something that will only come over the passage of time, of course, I think we will see some changes. Whether or not they'll drop it completely out is another question. But mature leagues don't have that. And we'll see. I suppose we are dealing with a unique marketplace in Australian sport. But what I think the round ball code has to hold on to is its integrity. We are the only football code that doesn't have a lopsided league draw, whereby you fit all the particular teams in home and away throughout the season. Now, the other football codes don't do that.
Yeah, they just kind of pick and choose which games they want to play the second time.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, going on to the Little Red, as the Twitter hashtag gods deemed it over the weekend, Wanderers got another win over the Melbourne Heart. So, look, they've been consistent. I'm going to give them that. The Wanderers are moving up to third now, which is...
So really that makes it 1-1 for Sydney and Melbourne over the weekend then?
Yeah.
Oh, or 2-1 if you want to talk about the women's game.
Yeah.
That's good stuff for the guys in New South Wales.
Yeah. So Wanderers, yeah, third position in the ladder. I'm pretty sure they're tied on points with Melbourne Victory at the moment. So, look, they could conceivably go to second by the end of this weekend because you've got the Melbourne Derby. That's always a really tight game. And then they're going to Adelaide just after their coach has left. So, look, to see a first season team that high up the ladder is just phenomenal.
What would you put it down to, Nick? Just this part of the season, we've had a number of games. They've had a couple of rounds now, and we do have the West Sydney Wanderers sitting where they are. Reflection of what the FFA making right choice, the way the club's been organised.
I think a lot has to go down to Popovich because he's obviously the team with him has selected these players, but yeah. When you start from scratch, you have to know exactly what you want from your what exactly you want your team to play, and then you have to get players to fit that idea that you want. You can't just really say, "Oh, I'll have this guy," because they're the best players available. It's more like these ones suit what I want to do best, and that's how I'm going to get them together.
Round pegs for round holes.
Rather, so they've bought imports that aren't well known, which is it's kind of what Postecoglou did with the Raw. He's like, I want to play this type of football. I need these imports to bring in that philosophy, and I need these players in my squad. So he cut half the Brisbane Raw team, that sort of thing.
That's a management thing rather than the coaching thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, isn't he the manager and the coach? I'm not really
sure. Yeah, he is. But I'm just distinguishing between the two here because I think there's a hell of a difference between purchasing and sort of, you know, purchasing players, setting a style for the team, and then having someone else actually go out and deliver put it into
sessions,
practice.
Make them work.
So, and I'm not sure. I mean, Popovich is a young guy. He's not that experienced. He's been hanging around Sydney FC for a couple of seasons. So he probably learned something from one of the 27 managers they've had.
Yeah.
But management still is a really big thing in these kinds of competitions. It's about who you put on the park and how you arrange them.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily about whether you're teaching them anything or whether you're improving them or whether you're getting the best out of them.
Yeah, so like they do have a lot of younger players, but I haven't seen too much of them. So there's a chance that they may start to tail off in the next couple of seasons if they're not grooming these players to step in properly. Mm.
The one good thing I did hear about Popovich was that their squad's probably fitter than most of the other squads.
You have heard that there's a lot of consistency in their lineup. They don't lose many players to injury, whereas you've got likes of Sydney who lost their entire defence for like 4 weeks, I think, due to injuries to all their players. And then You've got Brisbane, who are missing, what, Matt Smith.
I heard this on the weekend with the other game. Yeah. They were talking about all the people they'd lost. Perth was whining about how many players they didn't have playing for them.
It's they actually did a study over the course of last season, and they monitored how many players missed weeks of matches due to injuries. And the Mariners had the lowest injury rate out of the entire league, and they were the ones who won it. So a lot of people are saying if you can get your best 11 on the pitch consistently, that's what's going to make you the best team in the league, not whether you have the best players in your squad, because they might not play all the time.
But it also might mean, you know, there's also something about how much money you've got, because you might have a huge squad full of stars, and that's going to make sure that you're going to have a pretty competitive side every week.
Particularly if they're game changers as well. Although getting back to Popovic, I think at the moment his style's on the rise, and the better that they play, the better it is for him, I think.
Going on to the rest of the games this weekend. So Perth Glory at home to Brisbane Roar, unfortunately went down 1-0. Good result for the Roar, breaking a little bit of a bad run, and they managed to get themselves off that bottom two of the ladder. So
the only away win in the weekend.
Yeah,
it was a very dour game, though, I've got to say.
Yeah,
and a lot of spoiling football by both sides, because I mean Perth did talk about their injury list, and you know, people like Schmelz who weren't there, and all those other guys, Burns, that crew.
Oh yes.
And so you know they were missing quite a bit of steel in their team, but I mean I think a lot of sides this weekend had big injury lists.
Yeah. It's maybe just starting to get to the point where you see the players who have actually had a proper preseason, they continue with their conditioning, whereas the other ones who haven't really been as well looked after by their clubs start to break down to that excess of matches that we've had over the summer period. But it's been interesting. Final game of the weekend, Wellington broke their losing streak. Albeit it was only a draw, but it's not a loss. So that's a fairly decent result for them. Fenton was the one, I believe, who scored the goal for the Phoenix. And I have a complete mental blank on who scored the goal for the Jets. But, look, 1-1 draw. a point in Wellington is always really good, is what I've
said. It was a Heskey header, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it was.
It was a Heskey header.
There we go.
So Fenton was on the end of a scramble. I think it hit about four or five defenders and a couple of attackers, and he just poked it in, I think is how that worked.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's not a massively exciting game.
No. Well, hopefully we'll start to see a bit more of an improvement in results and general play over the next couple of weeks now that we're back to just a one game a week sort of tempo. Yeah. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for today, guys, but thanks for coming in. And if you're going to the new post, get there first.
See you next week, Nick.
See you, Nick.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.